Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast. Today is Wednesday, April 15th, tax day. Pay your taxes, serfs. I hope you paid your taxes, because if you didn't, the government will get you. Now, I wanted to talk to you today about ways to fund the government, or to fund, I like to say, public services, without the income tax. We're going to be discussing these kinds of ideas that I think might be a little bit more appealing to the American people. But you know what actually convinced me that I wanted to do this show today was I saw an interview between my old buddy Adam Kokesh and the Amazing Atheist online, where they were talking about taxation and force. And it was, you know, it was basically a liberal versus a libertarian type of debate. Although I think Kokesh considers himself an anarchist, not quite a libertarian, but, you know, it's a little semantics there. And what I saw, what was interesting, of course, was that the liberals, they don't quite understand that taxation really is force. You know, Adam was using the word violence, but I think violence is probably not the right word, because, you know, it makes people think, you know, of like shooting and guns and like wars and battles and things like that. So perhaps the word force might be a better choice of words, but it was the liberal who chose that word violence in the comment section in the YouTube video. And they were saying, you know, what a stupid argument that taxation is violence. But it is. It really is. And, you know, because he was making, you know, the stupid liberal was, you know, obviously saying, you know, the roads are built through violence, and saying what a joke that was. But they couldn't quite conceptualize the fact that the state really is a monopoly on violence and the use of force. And I know that my audience already understands this. I want to talk about it with you guys, because we're in friendly territory, obviously, right now. But why is it that liberals just don't get it? Why don't they understand what government really is? You know, it's like conservatives have this problem too, of course, when you say something like, you know, oh, okay, you know, ask anybody who's calling for a law, you know, against gay marriage or against, you know, for whatever reason, and just ask them, you know, are you willing to do violence to make sure that this law is passed? That's really what it boils down to. Is if you want to pass any new law, you have to ask yourself, or raise a tax, you have to say, are you willing to do violence if this is not, this law is not obeyed? Are you willing to use force? I mean, you know, the sad truth is that a lot of people are willing to use force to see their ideas enacted upon society. They're called politicians. but there's a lot of normal people, too, that do that. And this is all philosophical, but I'd like to get into the nitty-gritty of the real practical ways that we could possibly fund our government without requiring an income tax, without requiring that they, you know, rip our money away from us before we ever see it, which, you know, some people, a lot of libertarians, they say taxation is theft, and there are a lot of libertarians actually who argue against, usually the bleeding heart types, who say, oh, it's not right to equivocate these two, because a lot of times they'll say statism is slavery. I do think that is hyperbolic. But when you say taxation is theft, here's why I agree that taxation is theft. Because we never got to touch the money in the first place. Meaning that the money is withholding is that they take it out of your paycheck before you ever get a chance to use it. And so the government is basically claiming everything is theirs. They're claiming sovereignty over all of our pay before we ever get a chance to see it. So in that sense, taxation is absolutely theft. And if you do not pay the tax, of course, you would be subject to violence. You would be subject to violence. So don't let liberals get away with saying, you know, oh, I have no idea how this translates to violence. Perhaps use the terminology force, you know, and ask them, you know, are they willing to use force to do it? And of course they'll say, well, no, the government's going to use the force, not me. I'm like, listen, a-hole, if you believe that something should be done, do it yourself. You know, stop asking others to do violence on your behalf. That's all I'm saying. So my anarchist is coming out today. It's the 15th. This is a National Anarchy Day. Everybody should be an anarchist on April 15th. Rawr, burn it down. End the IRS. Rawr. Yeah, I'm fired up this morning. I hate government. I hate taxes so much, people. Can you hear it in my voice? Like the loathing for this government that takes half of everything that we make, everything that we create, our productive capacity, wasted wasted in the hands of the state. What do we get back for it? State parks. I mean, that's the best we get? What? State parks? And what? A nuclear arsenal? Okay. All right. That's what you've got to tax us for? But let's talk about it. Now, I'm going to get down on the nitty-gritty, and this is actually from an article that we published at the Libertarian Republic. It's kind of an older piece. However, it's a really popular one. It's one that we share, we trot out every once in a while when, you know, when state is sort of like, how would you fund a government? Without government, who would build the roads? And so we're going to talk today about six ways to fund public services in a libertarian republic. All right, so let's start out. This is by Keith Farrell. Are any taxes voluntary? Certainly not the income tax. No, almost all tax schemes eventually involve some form of coercion. As Mao Zedong says, political power grows out of the barrel of a gun. And there's nothing that gives a government more power than the laying and collection of taxes. But is there a way to collect taxes for public works without doing violence? Every libertarian has heard the question, if not for coercive taxation, how would society ever maintain infrastructure and provide services? In other words, who would build the roads? The number one way in which government can collect taxes without violence is a lottery. Of course, in a libertarian republic, government would not hold a monopoly on lotteries, but nonetheless, lotteries could be used to generate revenue through voluntary participation. Government could use a specific portion of a lottery's revenue for funding, and one or more lucky participants could win the rest. The Founding Fathers used this method. George Washington signed lottery tickets to raise money for public infrastructure. And think about that. The lotteries raise hundreds of millions of dollars for the government, and it requires no coercion whatsoever, other than the fact that they have a coercive monopoly on it, which to me is just totally ridiculous. But if the government wanted to fund infrastructure and public works, hold a lottery, hold a special lottery for each public work that you need to get done, and see that it comes in on time and under budget. You know, maybe if they thought that there wasn't going to be any guaranteed slough of taxpayers' dollars coming through that they could just feed at, that the bureaucrats and their crony capitalist friends could feed at, there's no public trough. Maybe they would actually bring these projects in under budget. I mean, remember the big dig in Boston? What a nightmare that was. Just an absolute, you know, just sinkhole of taxes. But if you had a lottery, you could raise hundreds of millions of dollars. Hundreds of millions of dollars. You tell me you can't build a bridge? Come on. Come on. Now, a lottery is a fantastic way to do it because a lottery is a tax, of course. People make the joke, you know, it's a tax on people who can't do math. And that's true. It is a tax on people who can't do math. And maybe I'm a bit of a Darwinist on this one, survival of the fittest. I mean, if you're so dumb that you got to participate in lotteries to try and get rich, then maybe you do deserve to be taxed. Like, it's sort of a stupid tax. It's a tax on stupid. But that's what we should be taxing. The income tax is a tax on productivity. A lottery is a tax on stupidity. I say we raise the taxes on stupidity. If you're going to raise taxes at all, raise them on the stupid people. And then, of course, that somebody would say, well, doesn't that mean that, you know, you would raise taxes on cigarettes? Yes, never mind. I'll take it back. No, but lottery is a better way to bring tax. Okay, number two, a consumption tax. Now, a lot of libertarians get angry when we talk about this because, yeah, it's semi-coercive. It's not fully coercive. A consumption tax, which is really a sales tax. But we'll discuss this. I'll read this little blurb here and we'll discuss it. The consumption tax is a tax on spending on goods and services. So a value-added tax is a tax which is based on the value added to a product at each stage of production. For example, if a retailer were to buy a shirt for $5 and sell it for $10, the tax would apply to the $5 difference. Each stage of the production process would incur tax, leaving a final product with a price incorporating those taxes. A sales tax is simply a tax on the consumer at the point of purchase of goods or services. An excise tax applies to the sale of a specific good or service by quantity, such as a per gallon gasoline tax. In each instance, the consumer is choosing to buy the good or service. So the consumption tax is what, you know, some people talk about like as a replacement for the income tax. And I know there's a lot of people who are big fans of the fair tax, which is sort of like similar here. There's what is the deal with those fair tax people? Why are they so freaking crazy, man? They are just in your face with their brilliant plan. It kind of reminds me of the LaRouchians. I mean, I like the idea of the fair tax. You know, it sounds better than obviously it sounds better than the income tax, but man, like those guys are aggressive. Like, they get in your face and be like, you know, have you heard the word of the fair tax? You know, it's like, you know, our Lord and Savior of the fair tax. I don't know, guys. You got to maybe change your approach on this one. I think a consumption tax is superior to an income tax, although there are real problems with it. So, for example, like a microchip. A microchip is assembled so many different ways from so many different places that, you know, it may make the cost of a microchip, which has shrunk because of capitalism, prohibitively expensive. So it could do, you know, it could be horrible for the economy. And that's one thing you have to consider when you're talking about going away from an income tax to a consumption tax. Of course, the thing here is that, you know, again, you would not have an income tax. So if you're paying 50% of your salary or whatever of your income to the income tax, you know, this maybe would just be transferred over to what you purchase. And of course, a lot of people would have a problem with that because, you know, they don't want to have to pay higher taxes on what they buy. But I think it is superior to the income tax, in my opinion. Number three, a voluntary tax. What? In a community, town, or city, a voluntary per-person tax may be implemented. Services provided by the town, such as fire and police services, could only be utilized by persons who have paid the tax. Those who choose not to would be left to fend for themselves. Oh my god! Hire private services or depend on volunteer services. With such a system, an introductory tax rate could be implemented. And with time, as more people join, the cost per person would decline. So this is sort of like a voluntary insurance in a sense, you know, like voluntary government in a sense. It's like, do you want the government? You know, if you want these services, fund it. And, you know, the more people participate, the more the cost goes down. But do you think people would not participate? I think they would if it was fire services, police services. I think that people would use it. But people are like, oh, no, police and fire, they have to be done by the government. Of course, there are so many volunteer firefighters absolutely out there. And there's a lot of cops who volunteer their time as well. But voluntary tax is an interesting way of looking at alternatives. Number four. Usage fees, tolls on roads, parking meters, city water, sewage access, and ambulance services, which bill for usage, are all current examples of people volunteering to use government services or infrastructure for a fee. This is a much fairer way to generate the revenue needed to maintain and operate government infrastructure than one which taxes those who do not need or use those services. This model can be extended to trash removal and fire services. So what is he saying? What he's saying is that, you know, if you live in a county or what have you that wants to build a bridge, you know, you may never use the bridge. Maybe you don't have a car. Maybe you ride a bicycle and you never go across the bridge whatsoever. So, you know, you're going to pay. If you go to the gas station, you're going to buy a gallon of gasoline to run your lawnmower. Well, that gasoline tax may be used to fund, you know, federal highway programs, right? But you don't even drive on the highway because, you know, your lawnmower isn't even a ride lawnmower. It's a push lawnmower. And so the reason why usage fees are superior is because only the people who actually use the service would pay for it, you know? So if you're talking about, you know, city water, parking meters, roads, sewage access, et cetera, you know, you could pay for those things if you actually use them. You know, there are some people who like to live off the grid, you know? There are some people who like to live in the woods and not have to, and live sustainably without being on the grid, without paying for electricity, water, fire, sewer, et cetera, they do everything on their own. And, you know, government doesn't like that. There are people who try and unhook themselves from public utilities. There's a case in Florida we wrote about last year of a woman who got fined because she cut herself off from public utilities. And the government doesn't like those people being, you know, independent like that. But this would be a step on the road to independence because only the people who are using these services would actually have to pay for them. I think that's fair, you know. But, you know, liberals and socialists and Democrats, they don't like that. Everybody must pay into the pool, even if you aren't using the service. You know, what if you're healthy and you never use an ambulance? You know, I think that, you know, this is actually a better way to fund services rather than an income tax. Let's see. Moving on. Number five, cooperatives. Okay, this is something that a lot of people actually don't know about. And this is a really important little piece of history that people should read more up because, you know, now obviously we have the insurance schemes, and it's because of the insurance schemes and because of the government coercive policies that we get the insurance industry such as it is because of all the you know, the taxpayer handouts to, you know, the bailouts and stuff of these insurance companies. And, you know, it's just, to me, of course, Obamacare is mandatory, mandatory insurance. So, of course, you're never going to have these again without dismantling Obamacare and dismantling the insurance regime that we have. And, of course, there are way too many crony capitalists and government, you know, bureaucrats who want to make sure that we keep this regime in place. But we used to have these things called co-ops. Workers and farmers co-ops, and instead of Social Security and Medicare taxes coming directly out of the pay of all Americans, those who wish to join together in a cooperative effort of investment or insurance purchasing would be free to, and those who didn't would be free not to participate. Group investment co-ops could offer future planning for Americans. Competing co-ops could offer high and low-risk packages with differing returns. Group insurance packages could also be purchased by a co-op, similar to the way which employers now participate in group packages through private insurance companies. So it's similar to the insurance schemes of the past, but it's less, you know, corporate and more people-powered. So if you want to form an insurance co-op, you could. But there's no incentive to now, of course, because all of our health insurance plans, of course, are tied to our employers or they're tied to the government, which is just an awful way of doing things. Now, I'm in the private market, of course, because I, you know, chose to pay higher premium just for the fact that, you know, I want to take the stance that I am not paying for Obamacare. I really just don't appreciate, I would not want to get government health care. I'll just tell you that much, for my own personal health and safety. So I'm paying more to be in the private market. But co-ops, I think, would be an excellent way for humans to band together and to solve our problems without forced taxation, without the forced Obamacare mandate. And co-ops have a long history in the United States. You guys ought to look them up and look up the insurance co-ops of the early 20th century, and you guys will find a lot of great information out there. And number six, the final way to raise funds in a libertarian republic, of course, would be to sell off the land, sell off the federal land. Yeah, local and state governments, local, state, and federal governments own a lot of land. Much of that land is not needed. Governments could sell this land or even hold a lottery for parcels of land or any unused government real estate. This revenue could be used to generate revenue for one-time projects such as funding the building of a new road or courthouse. Considering that in a libertarian republic, the government would have a much more limited role, these are more than adequate means to generate revenue. See, the thing is that people think, how would we fund this enormous government? Well, we wouldn't have an enormous government, you see. You see, that's the whole thing. Is you think, well, how would we pay for all of this? Well, you wouldn't, because we wouldn't have all of that. So yeah, we could fund the limited government services that would be necessary to have a functioning, stable, representative, democratic republic. But it just wouldn't be an enormous big government. So you wouldn't need an income tax. A libertarian republic's government would provide national security, a justice system to protect people's rights, a civil law system to enforce contracts, and the provision of infrastructure for those means. Services and infrastructure beyond that would be provided privately whenever possible, if not left to localities and funded only through the methods that we have mentioned here. So what do you think, ladies and gentlemen? Would you prefer these options to the current confiscatory method of taxation, the income tax? Have you paid your taxes? Are you a principled non-tax-paying citizen? I'd love to hear from you guys. So if you go to thelibertarianrepublic.com, you can go and you can contact us and send us an email. Tell me what you think about the podcast. I'd really love to hear what you guys think. We had one last week. It was insane. 360,000 downloads of my podcast about what I saw at the Rand Paul event. Of course, the traffic to TLR has been really big lately. There have been a lot of exciting things. Julie Borowski is going to start writing for the Libertarian Republic, which is really cool. She's starting a website up on her own, but she's going to be working with me for a little bit, riding a side saddle here. She's going to be on the boat, Libertarian Republic boat, for a little while she gets started on her own, and I'm very excited and happy for her. We also have another interview with Julie that you can find. So do us a favor, you know, subscribe to me on iTunes. Do you have an Apple device? If so, and you subscribe to us on iTunes, I'd really appreciate it if you guys would leave me a 5-star review. Just, you know, hit that little button, 5 stars, boom. And if you really like Austin Peterson, if you know who Leif Beaverson is, I really, 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 guys, please do me a favor. Go to iTunes and write me out a nice little review. What do you think of the show? And tell other people to subscribe as well, because that will help me spread the message. If you don't have an Apple device, no problem. Of course, you can go to Stitcher.com. Stitcher, like, you know, cross stitch. But it's Stitcher.com. Stitcher is the Android app that will let you download the Freedom Report podcast. So that way you guys can get your liberty loving every single week. And lots of exciting news. Started a new employee this summer, Laura Myers. She's going to be my intern slash slave. And I'll be sending her to the Hill for some original reporting, which is exciting. Lots of new writers blowing stuff up. I mean, we are just taking over. The libertarian moment is now. And the Libertarian Republic is the spearhead, baby. And I'm so happy to be a part of this. I'm so glad that I'm a part of this movement. Thank you guys for being freedom fighters along with me. And let's hope that when Rand Paul is elected for president, that we will get rid of the income tax and maybe we'll just replace it with the lottery. Or nothing. No government! Down with the government! April 15th, ladies and gentlemen, tax day. Don't forget to pay your taxes or there will be violence. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for visiting and don't forget to come back every single day to your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at the Libertarian Republic.com.